we must head back to the city. I...
Sorry, said Matt,
slopping into the shed from outside. He was festooned with oil-dark horse harness, head and shoulders soaked with the ceaseless rain.
Didn't mean to interrupt.
You ain't, he said, frowning. All Matt's colour was bled from his face, leaving it drawn and pallid. You all right? Matt let the harness slide free onto a cluttered bench.
The unbalance of magic is getting worse. I'm feeling it more with every hour that passes.
Asher nodded. Aye. He could feel it too, like sharp fingernails digging into his brain, scraping over his skin. You got to block it out, Matt, else it'll tear you apart. Matt pulled a face.
I'm trying, but I'm not you.
He looked at Vera.
Can you spare a moment to help me strengthen this harness? I've grown more used to needles and wax thread than bindings, and I never was much good at them to begin with.
Course she will, Asher said cheerfully. She ain't got nowt better to do just now, since I'm for a breather. And he made his escape before Vera could shout or slap him again. He ran over the squelching grass to the cottage, shoved open the kitchen door, and escaped inside, dripping. The kitchen was full of more cleaned harness, cooking smells, and Darren, who took one look at his face, rummaged in a cupboard, pulled from it an anonymous bottle of something that looked promising, at least, and poured himself half a glassful. He swallowed it in one gulp, then staggered around for a while, coughing and wheezing and banging his chest.
You're welcome, said Darren.
Flour daubed his waistcoat, his face, his hair. He was in the middle of rolling pastry. It looked suspiciously lumpy. Asher held out his emptied glass and waited. Pinch-faced, Darren poured him a stingy second splash, ostentatiously recorked the bottle, and returned it to the cupboard. He wasn't a slow learner. Sipping this time, not gulping, he emptied the glass again and put it in the sink, glanced at Darren, sighed, rinsed it and set it upside down to dry. Darren returned to his pastry.
Gar never meant to hurt you.
Another sigh. He had no strength for this. It's been said before and now's changed. Let it be, old man. Bang went the rolling pin onto the table.
He saved your life!
You mean Matt's?
And yours. Don't you even care how? Or is hating him more important than knowing the truth?
Asher looked at him. The old crow's eyes were blazing with unfair hope and accusation. He didn't want to see that, so he slouched over to the window, looked at the rain instead of this pleading old man who'd been nothing but a trial and tribulation to him from the first day they'd met.
Aye, he said surly. Hate's a lot more important.
Darren seized him, pushed up his jacket and shirt sleeve to reveal the ragged scar from his madcap Resthaven childhood with Jed.
The other man's arm was scarless, but Gar said it was your body burned in the Glimfire. He knew it wasn't, and he lied, though he could have died for it then and there. He said it so they'd believe you were dead. That must be worth a little forgiveness, surely.
No, said Asher baldly. It ain't.
Why not?
Demanded Darren, pleading.
Have you never done anything you've not been sorry for after? That you did because you had to, even though it led to someone else's suffering?
Jed. He skewered the old crow with a scathing glare. I never went back on the promise. And if Gar'd done the same, there'd have been no body to identify at all now, would there? Someone still died, Darren. Darren flinched as though he'd been struck.
I know. The prince is most...
Good. Then maybe you can ask Rafel to forgive Gar, he said bitterly. Just don't ask me again, Darren. You'll only be wasting your time and mine.
Darren picked up his rolling pin and attacked the pastry.
Yes, he said, clipped and cold. Yes, I quite see that I would.
Furious he'd been goaded into saying more than he'd intended, Asher headed for the inside kitchen door, thinking to change his wet clothes. He hauled it open, and Gar was on the other side.
"What?"
he said roughly.
"What do you want?"
From the stricken look on his face, Gar had been eavesdropping. Mute, he held out his hand. In it was another sheaf of papers covered in his quick writing. "More spells," he said, subdued.
"Fine,"
Asher said, and snatched them. He'd worry about dry clothes later. Turning on his heel, he stalked out of the kitchen, into the rain, back to the business of killing with magic. Shaken, Gar ignored the pleading look on Darren's pale face and returned to the sitting room in Baal's diary. He had only a few more pages left to examine. Relief warred with a sharp, unexpected sorrow at the thought. With the diary wholly translated, he'd be leaving Baal behind, saying goodbye. It hurt to think of that. Baal, Baal. How glorious she was. A woman unmatched in the history of their people. Brave, dedicated, consumed with integrity. He could read her handwriting now as easily as his own. She spoke to him intimately, mind to mind, a whispering of desperate confidences, betraying to him and only him the secret torments of her heart, her doubts, her fears, her passionate longings. He understood her as no one ever had, certainly not her faithless lover Morgan. Pulling the diary towards him, he turned to the next page, blinked a couple of times to clear his fuzzy vision, then focused on the hastily scrawled entry. "Being an incantation, I shall call the words of unmaking. This is a terrible thing, and only my overwhelming fears have led me to it. The seeds of this monstrous spell grew out of my work with Morgan, though it shames me now to admit it. I do believe that the wall I labor to bring forth will protect us from him. I believe we will be safe behind it forever. But if my belief proves false, yet will I prevail against him. For the dread words recorded hereafter will undo him utterly. Yes, and they will undo the speaker also. Undo me, for no one else shall have them. If I must use them, if I must die, I shall be justly punished." Silence, as the carved wooden clock on the wall ticked away the seconds and minutes of what might be Lur's last days. Mouth dry, hands sweaty, he read the diary entry again, then looked at the recorded incantations, noted the syllables and the sigils and the rhythms of the words, and saw, his heart hard beating, that victory was held here in his hands. Victory and death. There were no more spells in the diary after Baal's words of unmaking, the spell that would ensure Morg's death and Asher's with it. He read it again, 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 marveled at the simplicity of its structure, its exquisite elegance, so quintessentially Baal. Recognized its triggers and why without question it would work. With magic a fading memory in his blood, he could barely feel the incantation's power. Faced with the potential of such dreadful destruction, he felt briefly, guiltily relieved the burden of its utterance would never fall upon him. And then, as he read the incantation for the eighth time, his disciplined, scholarly, educated mind went click, and suddenly he saw Baal's spell in a whole new light, saw it for what it was, but also what it could be. Still victory, still death, and yet entirely different. He slammed the diary shut, shoved away from his makeshift desk, and roamed Vera's small sitting room, banging front mantelpiece to sofa to window and back again. He was sweating. Could he do it? Did he even dare try? if the memory of magic wasn't enough, if his vaunted scholarship were faulty, if he misplaced just one single syllable, he could kill everyone, even perhaps leave Morg alive. No, he couldn't do it. Shouldn't. The risk was too great. It was arrogance inconceivable to think of altering Baal's final, perhaps greatest work. How long had he been a magician? Mere weeks. It wasn't enough. If what he believed was true, if the powers he'd manifested had never been his but were part of Morg's plan, then he'd never been a real magician. Had never been anything but a magicless cripple. A pawn, used and discarded on a whim. And yet, he could see it, feel it, taste the changes to her incantation, if only in his mind. He knew Baal as well as he knew himself now, knew how her mind worked, how it saw and shaped the world as completely as he knew his own. He could do this. He flung himself back to the makeshift desk, opened the diary, pulled a fresh sheet of paper towards him, and re-inked his pen. "I can do this, Baal," he said aloud, as though she was nearby, listening. "I must do this. I know you want me to. And it's the only way to repay my debts. Sweet lady, help me." Outside the cottage, the last of the daylight was washed away, and a rain-soaked night fell. As the cottage clock struck 7, Vera shepherded everyone into the kitchen for dinner. Just as they sat down to Darren's lumpy rabbit pie, one of the villagers, braving the dreadful weather, came calling at the back door to see if she was all right. She shooed the others into the corridor where they hid and held their breaths, until Gavin was persuaded she was coping just fine, thank you, and went away. "Is there news from the circle, Vera?" said Daphne, as they resumed their seats at the crowded kitchen table. "What's happening elsewhere in the kingdom?" Vera sighed.
"Nothing good, child. I've heard from everyone and every story is the same. Storms rage from coast to coast. There's flooding, fires, tremors that tear the earth apart, just as when King Born was ill. Fear riots unchecked in village and township streets alike."
"And what of my people?" said Gar. "Are there no Doran in attempting to help?"
"A few," she said, shrugging. "But what can they do? They have no weather magic. I'm told most of them have gone into hiding on their country estates, panic-stricken, like the Ulken."
As Gar looked at his plate, clearly distressed, Darren cleared his throat. "What about the Doranan in the city? The kingdom's strongest magicians sit on council, surely?" She shook her head.
"Morg suspended council business. Balsman Hulls has sent out orders for everyone to pray."
"So, not even he suspects Geralt isn't Geralt?"
said Matt, stabbing his fork into a potato. Unwillingly, Vera shared her last tidbit of gossip.
"All the troubles being blamed on Asher."
Asher snorted. "That's convenient."
"It's very clever and inconvenient. We'll have to work hard to make sure you're not noticed once we get into the city."
She sat back in her chair, appetite defeated.
"We have to leave at first light. I'd be happier going soon after supper, but the roads will be too treacherous in the dark, and we can't risk Glimfire."
She looked at Gar.
"You all done with your translating, then?"
Gar put down his knife and fork. His expression was wary, watchful. She didn't like the look of it.
"Done?" he said. "Yes, I'm done. But the last spell isn't like the others. It's not a summoning for war beasts."
"Then what is it?" said Daphne.
"A spell that Asher can only say once. A spell I'll have to teach him myself on the road to Dorana."
For the first time, Asher looked at him.
"You ain't coming with us. You can teach me it tonight."
"I'm too tired tonight," said Gar, flushing. I've been working all day, and this is a desperately complicated incantation, much harder than the others. Seated beside him, Vera put her hand on his arm.
Why?
He took a breath, let it out. Because it's a killing spell, powerful enough to destroy Morg himself.
And you're only just telling us now?
Said Asher, glaring. Gar held his hot gaze steadily. It was the last spell in the diary. Baal's final defense against Morg. I had to be sure I translated it properly.
And did you?
Yes. It will kill him. Still, Asher stared.
And what else?
I know you, Gar. There's something you ain't saying. Spit it out. Unfortunately, it will also kill you. His words sparked a tempest.
Then he can't use it, cried Daphne. How can you even think he would?
There's got to be another way, said Matt, pushing his plate away. Prophecy says nothing about...
I told you he was trying to kill me, said Asher, indignant.
Vera slammed her hand hard on the table, making them all jump and fall silent.
Enough! Nobody said he has to use it. Might be we'll kill this morgue with an army of those monsters Asher conjured up this afternoon. But we can't afford to ignore any weapon handed us in this war. It's a kingdom, and thousands upon thousands of lives at stake.
She looked at Asher, willing all kind understanding from her face.
But in the end, we're not the ones who'll be called on to use it and die. That might be your fate, child. Can you bear it? If all else fails, could you use this weapon, though it costs you your life?
Asher shoved back from the table, rubbed his hands across his face, then let them fall to his side. Why are you even asking, old woman? His cold gaze raked across all their faces. You got me to promise to help you, and you know bloody well I keep my promises, no matter what it costs me. Besides, there's some as might think I'm already dead, that all I am is a man living on stolen time.
Do you think that?
Said Matt, into the red-hot silence. Asher shrugged. Don't matter what I think. Nowt matters any more, save for stopping that monster in the city.
Yes,
Vera said, when no one else could answer him.
No matter what it costs any of us, Morg must be stopped. Now let's all finish eating, shall we? Then get ourselves some sleep. It'll be a mortal bad trip back to Dorna.
Returned to the weather chamber under cover of darkness, Morg raged and raged round the weather map till all the polish was worn from the parquetry and the mellow timber shone dim. The bitch whore's golden barrier was pockmarked with weaknesses now, its intricate incantations fraying apace. Outside the chamber a shrill wind was howling. Trees lashed the cloud-clotted sky, and lightning stabbed both air and sodden ground. The world bled rain. The map itself was suffering too. Leprous patches of decay and destruction marred it from end to end. His listening mind heard a far distant keening. He lifted his eyes and stared through the clear crystal ceiling at the writhing gold light above him.
Yes, slut! Scream! Scream!
An unheralded voice said somewhere behind him,
Conroyd, Your Majesty, might we have a word?
Startled, he spun around, stepped back incredulous, furious.
Sorvold, you vomitous excrescence, get out! All of you, get out! You are not wanted here!
They'd come in a gaggle like geese. Sorvold, Daltrey, and uninvited back from the country, Boker and Hafar also, Conroyd's dear friends and confidants. As they stared at him, slack-faced with shock, he laughed his delight.
You lack wits! Don't you know he despises you?
Foolishly, they'd braved the inclement weather, wet, wind-tossed, plastered with tattered leaves, despite their skills and velvets and their pitiful little magics. They looked like destitute vagabonds. Payne Sorvold said, very slowly,
Your Majesty, are you unwell?
Victory was vintage ice wine, burning in his blood. He spread his hands.
Unwell? On the contrary, gentlemen, I am superb. I said, get out.
They exchanged uneasy glances. Sorvold spoke again.
Your Majesty, we are here on behalf of your council, your people. The weather is disturbing. The wall itself seems, its appearance suggests, Your Majesty, clearly something is wrong.
Boker took a step forward, neglected to bow.
Conroy, in plain language, you have refused to meet with us that we might form a proper advisory for you in these early unquiet days of your reign. Against all precedent and sound precepts of governance, you've suspended the kingdom's lawful council. Anxious messengers pour into the city from districts throughout the kingdom, desperate to know how to proceed in the face of the weather's wildness. And an hour ago your assistant Willer informed us that our former monarch, Prince Gar, has vanished without trace.
He laughed out loud. He hadn't heard. Didn't care.
Vanished? Vanished? Oh, poor little runtling, running and running with no place to hide.
It was Hafar's turn to remonstrate.
Conroy, it's clear you're unwell. Perhaps the transfer of weather magic went awry. You should not have attempted it without a master magician to aid you. We did try to warn you, sir.
We must be honest, Con, said bluff Noel Daltrey.
Your kingship's off to a very bad start. Public executions, missing princes, and now this dreadful weather. What are you doing to it? The city's in an uproar. Captain Auric can barely maintain order. There's panic in the streets, mobs at the palace demanding explanations, and hardly any Doranin are left to help control the population after your stupid wife summoned them to the country. It's an utter disaster, and you're to blame. Now how are you going to fix it?
He heaved a thundering sigh.
Oh, Noel. Do rest that treadmill tongue of yours. I have no intention of fixing it. Everything unfolds as I desire.
As you desire? Said Boker. Conroy, are you mad then, if not ill? Have you looked outside this chamber? The wall itself's in danger.
He smiled, rejoicing.
The wall itself is falling, fool, and soon you'll all fall with it.
Baal save us, Daltrey whispered.
I think you have gone mad, Con. Gentlemen, you heard him.
Indeed we did, said Hafar grimly.
We come just in time. His Majesty is unfit.
Sorvold stepped forward, his expression rigid.
You must accompany us, sir. Immediately. Whatever ails you, Partha Nix shall discover it, and with Baal's blessings, put you right again.
Partha Nix is a pusspot. I am as well as I have ever been. Gentlemen, you're dismissed.
No, sir.
Said Sorvold, still approaching.
You are desperately ill. You must be, for the Conroy Geralt I know and admire would never...
He stopped the idiot with a tender smile, reached out and laid his palm so gently above the bleating fool's heart, leaned close, and showed him his true self.
But pain,
he whispered, as Sorvold's face turned grey and his mouth sagged in horror.
Can't you tell? I am not the Conroy Geralt you know and admire.
A thought, and the laboring heart beneath his hand stopped beating.
Conroyd!
The rest of the geese cried out, daring to criticize and question. So he slaughtered them like geese, dropped their bodies where they stood, burned them to ash with an incandescent thought, then forgot they had ever existed. Chapter 35. The storm was worse come cockcrow. Wilder wind, heavier rain, gusting with hailstones and flurries of sudden snow. The fringe of black woods around Vera's cottage was battered and full of gaps where trees had been torn down through the night. The world looked desolate, beyond all hope. The sound of running water filled the sodden air. As Vera battled through the deepening mud, freeing her pigs and chickens and the donkey, Asher helped Matt harness the unhappy horses to the wagon. Matt looked even paler this morning. Instead of sleeping last night, as Vera had ordered, he'd spent hours cobbling together blanket-lined canvas covers for the animals to protect them from the rain and hail. Checking buckles, tugging knots, Asher said, "What do you reckon we'll find once we get to Dorana?" Matt shrugged.
"I'm trying not to think."
"Asher," he sighed, knowing what Matt was about to say. "Don't. There ain't any point. If I got to say Gar's killing spell, then so be it. You want to get rid of Morg, don't you?"
"Of course I do. But not like..."
"Like what? Me dying?" he demanded. "You mean to say you never thought it'd come to this? Even though your bloody prophecy says as much?"
"No,"
Matt protested.
"I never. At least I hoped."
"Hope? Since when did hope save lives, Matt? I could stand in the middle of City Square and hope till my head falls off that Morgul dropped dead at my feet, but it ain't going to happen unless I make it happen."
"That doesn't mean..."
"It probably does," he said, "and you've always known it. Don't go insulting my intelligence now, Matt. Not after all we've been through." Matt stared at him, stricken.
"Daphne told me not to be your friend. She always knew how bad things might get."
"Daphne." He turned away. "You should have listened." Frowning, Matt eased himself round to check the nearside horse's tail, tied up to keep it out of the mud.
"You should make your peace with her. This silence is killing her, Asher."
He felt his heart hitch. "That's my business, Matt."
"You're being unfair."
"You want I should stop talking to you too?" he said, dangerously close to snarling. "Leave it, Matt. I got enough to give me headaches without personal claptrap on top of it." The horses tossed their heads and stamped, unsettled by their edgy voices as well as the howling rain. Matt reached out a hand to them and murmured, soothing. Then he nodded and sighed.
"All right, Asher. Whatever you want. It's just a shame is all. I'll say this for the last time, then I'll not say it ever again. She loves you."
Over his shoulder, walking away, Asher answered, "Don't you know, Matt? Love's the bloody least of it." They left the cottage soon after that, Matt driving, with Daphne on one side and Vera the other. In the back of the wagon, under the makeshift canvas covering drummed with rain, Asher, Gar and Darren and their baskets of supplies. The old man tucked himself up in a blanket and quickly fell asleep, a bundle of snoring bones. "I fear it's been too much for him," Gar said, fretting. "I should have left him behind in the tower." Asher snorted.
"You should have done a lot of things, I reckon. Bit late now, though, eh?"
Gar looked down at the paper in his hands. His face was closed off, unreadable. The way it used to be in the early days, when Gar was still Your Highness and friendship never thought of. "I hope not." His fingers smoothed over the paper's creased surface. "I hope with this,
I can put everything right. That's what you call killing me, is it? Putting everything right? He laughed. It don't bother you at all, eh?
Gar's eyes glinted.
What? That this spell I've translated will destroy you? If I said yes, would you believe me?
He let his head fall back against the wagon's temporary canvas wall.
Of course you wouldn't. You've made your feelings plain, Asher. Let's not belabor them now. You've agreed to do this, and I've agreed to help. Let's leave it at that, shall we?
Asher pulled his knees up to his chest and wrapped his arms around them, glanced up as, overhead, the sky, invisible, was rumbled through with thunder.
Aye. Let's.
Good, said Gar tightly. Now, shall we get to work on the incantation? I know we've got hours to go till we reach Dorna, but this isn't a task for skimping. And how am I meant to practice the bloody thing if saying it's going to kill me?
Credit me with at least some intelligence, Gar snapped. I've broken it into sections. We'll work through them one at a time, out of order, and leave the sigils till last. Once you've committed each section to memory, I'll show you the proper order they come in. All right?
Grudgingly, he nodded.
Aye. Fine. All right.
Good, said Gar. Now pay attention.
Daphne huddled inside her enveloping blanket and kept her gaze pinned to the horses' wet, canvas-covered backs. Poor things. They looked so miserable. Ears pinned to their heads, snapping peevishly at each other every other stride, bound-up tails lashing. The waterlogged road unrolled before them, bordered each side with battered trees. The wagon's wheels slipped and slithered, and the horses grunted with the effort of hauling it. Beside her, Matt held the reins in hands reddened with cold. He was swaddled in one of Daphne's blankets too, but she could still feel him shivering, suffering with the collapse of the kingdom's fabric of magic. Even she, never as adept as Matt, was starting to feel it now, a thin, cold scream on the edge of hearing. She felt like screaming herself. How much fear and sorrow could a body hold before it must spill out in a raging torrent? Asher would not speak to her. Asher might well soon be dead. She turned her head to stare at the slowly passing countryside, stuffing her knuckles in her mouth to dam the frightened grief. If he died without forgiving her, died believing their love was a lie, nothing but pragmatics and a cold, hard using, how could she go on after? What would she say to the child? Their child. Unbidden, her fingers danced feather light across her belly. Was it a boy or a girl? Would it have his eyes? Would she see him in the way it walked? Hear him in the sound of its laughter? Would it even be born? Or was it, like him, destined to die? Did death await them all in distant Dorna? No. She had to stop thinking like this, or she'd be a drooling madwoman before ever they reached the city gates. There was hope yet. There was always hope. She couldn't, wouldn't believe that prophecy had guided them so far, only to abandon them at the end.
Please, please, don't let him die.
The clickety-clack of busy needles distracted her, and she glanced past Matt to Vera. The old woman was knitting. Knitting! As though she was at home in her kitchen or in front of the fireplace and these were ordinary times. Vera looked up.
You fratched about our mage and his friend tucked up behind us? Don't be. They'll not come to blows.
I know, Daphne said, tried to say nothing else, but the words were out before she could stop them. Vera. He won't have to use that killing spell, will he?
In between them, Matt shook the waterlogged reins and kept his gaze pinned to the horses' backs. If he was filled with fears too, he wasn't letting them show.
He'd gotten good at hiding his feelings lately. Once, she would have welcomed that. But now it just made her feel more alone. Vera hissed over a dropped scarlet stitch.
I hope not, she said, making good her mistake. I've taken steps to join him with the circle so they can lend him strength when he needs it most.
That got Matt's attention. They exchanged startled glances.
When?
Daphne demanded. And why aren't Matt and I included?
It's too dangerous for you and Matthias. The rest of the circle is safe out of the way, but we're like to be in the thick of things, child. You'd just be a distraction to him.
Then how can we help him?
Said Matt, frowning.
We can't do nothing.
Vera patted his knee.
I don't know yet. We'll just have to wait and see once we get there.
Wait and see. Wait and see. Yes, but what? Victory or a bloody defeat? The thought of Asher saying the terrible spell of unmaking made her want to vomit. Damn Gar anyway! Why did he have to find it? Why did he have to tell them? Send me a vision, I beg you, Javel. Show me he's not going to die.
She closed her eyes then, and waited. But Javel refused to oblige.
Bastard!
Eyes smarting, throat clogged with tears, she folded her arms across her middle, let herself slump on the wagon's uncomfortable seat, and tipped her head sideways till it rested on Matt's shoulder. He didn't object. She escaped into sleep and restless, unhelpful dreaming. Dorana City was dying. Morg stood on the roof of the emptied palace's residential wing and watched its distant death throes, smiling. Behind him, against a sky of tarnished silver, Baal's wall was a coruscation of filthy, failing power, flogged in the wind like a tattered flag.
At last, the bitch whore was beaten.
Beneath his feet, an ominous rumble. The rooftop trembled as the palace swayed drunkenly on its foundations. Below him, the sounds of windows breaking, of bricks and tiles falling to shatter in the buckling courtyards. In the gardens, mighty trees groaned and shuddered, their roots tearing asunder the rain-softened ground. After 600 years, the earth was waking, shrugging its shoulders as the bonds of magic were finally freed. He heard screaming from the rooftops around him, saw a few frantic Doranan, many more Olkin, former councillors and advisers, palace servants, housemaids, butlers, running to and fro as their gentle world fell to pieces around them. They saw him.
Your Majesty! Your Majesty!
They screamed like children.
Help us! Save us!
He raised a fist and stopped their heartbeats, each and every one. The noise was distracting. He wanted to savor victory uninterrupted. A shadow touched his face, and he looked up to see fresh clouds roiling, forming out of nothingness, out of the air, born of the wild and undirected weather magic he'd unbound from Baal's wall. They clotted the face of the faded sun, turning day to murky dusk. With a grinding rumble, the earth heaved again, vomiting gouts of steam and boiling mud. In the distance, in the city, he saw more buildings tumble, imagined the horror, the terror, and was suffused with a blinding joy.
Your Majesty, Your Majesty,
a small voice croaked behind him. Without turning, he said,
Go away, Willa.
But, Your Majesty...
So he did turn, impatiently, and looked at the pathetic thing bowing and scraping its way across the rooftop towards him.
What?
Willa stared at him, blotchy with fear and reeking of ale.
Captain Oryx sends an urgent message.
Many streets are running like rivers, and the water's scouring everything from its path. There's drowned dogs, wrecked carriages, furniture.
He choked on the horror.
People! Children!
He nodded. Good.
Good?
Stunned, silent, the little worm groped to understand.
But, you're the king! You're the weather worker!
Fool, he said, contemptuous. I am neither. I never was. Tears rose in the fat man's eyes.
Please, your majesty. Captain Auric begs you to come. Balsman holds too. Survivors are gathered in the square. They're praying, but they need you.
He sighed. Go away, Willa. Sweating, weeping, the worm wrung its feeble hands.
Are you unwell, sir? Shall I fetch you a poffer?
Morg considered him. Witter, witter, witter. The bleatings of a sheep. I wonder, was there a reason for you to be breathing? He mused. Willa goggled, began to back away, very slowly.
Your majesty?
No, he decided. No, you've served your tiny purpose. He pointed a finger and froze the maggot where it stood. But before I dispatch you, would you like to know what you've done? What miracle your little mind and petty jealousies have wrought in this misbegotten kingdom? Lifting his finger, he set the worm adrift in the damp and stagnant air. It shrieked.
No! No! Somebody! Help!
Look at it, Willa, he invited. The might and the majesty of your blessed Baal's wall. Do you see that it's failing? Do you see that it's falling? Do you know that you're to blame?
Me, sir? No, sir!
The bobbing creature protested. He laughed at the horror in its face. Oh, yes, sir. For the only man with the power to stop me was Asher of Resthaven, and thanks to you, he's dead. The worm began flapping its arms, trying to force itself back to the roof. It looked ridiculous.
King Conroyd! King Conroyd!
Not Conroyd, he advised the worm gently. Morg. Willa shrieked.
Who? No, you can't be. That's impossible.
Breathing deep of the sulphurous air, he flared power round his body in a crimson nimbus, laughed aloud at the terror, the dawning belief in the little man's eyes.
Stop this! Stop it!
The full worm babbled.
Before it's too late, don't you see? You're killing the kingdom!
Of course I am. To be reborn, all things must die.
No, no! I don't want to die!
The wretched thing wailed.
Please don't hurt me! Please put me down!
Put you down? He echoed, smiling. Certainly, Willa. Whatever you desire. And with a flick of his finger, he spun sobbing Willa over the roof's stone balustrade, then released him to fall to the flagstones below, where he burst in a welter of blood and fat. Overhead, the first bright spears of scarlet lightning lanced the billowing clouds, striking flesh and buildings with lethal force. The lurid sky writhed, and Baal's dying wall flailed in useless defiance. Dreary in the daylight gloom, the wagon trundled onwards. The cloud-filled sky stretched on forever, spitting rain and snow in gusts and eddies, sometimes furious, sometimes sullen. The hours unspooled, equally sullen. The wagon's shivering passengers dwindled to silence. They saw not another soul as they travelled through the blighted, sodden countryside towards Dorina City. Matt unhappily kept the horses moving, stopping only to let them drink and snatch a mouthful of grain. Morning surrendered to midday, surrendered to afternoon, surrendered to night.
"We won't stop again till we reach the city," decreed Vera, lighting torches to leaven the dark as Matt ran his hands over the tired horses and the others staggered about in the puddles and slop, stretching their tired legs and trying to get warm.
"If you're hungry, raid the baskets. If you must piss or otherwise, do your business quickly and run to catch up. There's no time left for niceties or coddling."
She frowned at Darren.
"Sorry, old man, but there's no help for it."
Darren nodded.
"I understand,"
he croaked, and climbed back in the wagon, out of the blighting wind.
"And when will we reach the city?" asked Daphne weakly, rattled almost to pieces and leaning against a wheel.
"An hour or two past sunrise, I'm thinking," said Vera, and pulled a face. "Though I doubt we'll be able to see it."
For Asher, filled to bursting with the prickly magic of Gar's killing spell, and trapped in the prince's unwelcome company, the end couldn't come fast enough. No matter it might bring with it his death. For the first and likely last time in his life, Pelin Oryk felt desperate. Staring through his office's broken windows, he rubbed his pain-burned shoulder and struggled to hold back tears. The dawn of a new day, the worst of his life. His beautiful city, elegant, gracious Dorna, spread smashed and trampled before him. Every second building, it seemed, was collapsed or burning or burned out completely, belching greasy smoke, spilling ruined wares through splintered doorways and shattered shop fronts, even as dirty water swirled around the floors and up the door jams. Bulls and cows and horses and sheep and goats, once safely penned in the livestock quarter, milled and lowed and bleated through the streets, with no one willing or able to pen them up again. Some of them slipped, plunged head first into running water or gaping cracks in the ground, and didn't get up again. There were more dead people than he'd thought to see in all his life, crushed and smashed by falling masonry, bludgeoned and drowned by the rivers of debris-choked rainwater raging through the narrowest streets. Some of the bodies were abandoned, others clutched hard in the arms of weeping loved ones. Olkin and Doranan, this madness had spared neither, nor had magic saved them. Most of his guards had deserted their posts. Some had fled the city with family and friends, certain that just beyond the next bend, in the next town or village, lay safety and sanity. The few who'd remained were dead or had gathered in the square to pray, ignoring his pleas to uphold their duty and their oaths. He couldn't really blame them. If he'd had a family, he might have discarded duty too, run away or joined with the crowd crammed into the square where Balsman Holes all yesterday led beseeching prayers for deliverance. But deliverance didn't seem to be coming. Dorna was doomed, and the kingdom with it. Weary almost beyond walking, he made his way downstairs to the guardhouse's deserted main hall, where Ox Bunder held steadfastly to his post.
"Captain," Bunder frowned. "Where's your sling, sir? That shoulder's nowhere near to healed yet."
"My shoulder's the least of my troubles," he replied tiredly.
"Ox, you've a young family waiting. Why don't you go? I'll stay here for all the good I can do."
"No, sir," Bunder said, stubborn to the last. "I've got my duty." Before this, he'd never much cared for Bunder. Now his heart broke for love of him.
"No, my friend. You've got your family. Go to them. That's an order."
He held out his hand.
"And good luck."
Torn between guilt and relief, Bunder clasped his wrist.
"Yes, sir. All right."
Auric walked out with him. His lovely city stank of burnt bones and death. Stopping at the guardhouse gates, he patted Bunda on the back and watched the man force his way through the milling throng, the frightened animals, the puddles and debris. Scarlet lightning split the sky, spearing the ground with random vengeance. The golden cockerel burst apart. A score of people died then and there, pulped and broken by flying brick, even as they ran screaming for shelter. But in the center of the square, citizens with more faith than sense stood their ground, eyes fixed firmly on holes on Baal's chapel steps, as they stubbornly followed the cleric's desperate prayers. Some folk even climbed into supplicant's fountain. Clustered round Baal's green stone statue, they stroked and stroked her hands, her feet, the folds of her robe, begged her in high, shrill voices to protect them, save them, forgive them. Forgive them for what? What sin could merit such harsh retribution? He was a guardsman. He knew crime when he met it. The people of Lur had done nothing, nothing to warrant the horrors he'd witnessed, the carnage yet to come. All his life he'd thought himself a man of faith, but what was it he believed in? A cold stone statue? A woman who died over 600 years ago, at an age almost young enough to be his daughter? Magic? For 6 long centuries the Ulken had been told the Dorinan were different, stronger, better. But the streets were littered with Dorinan dead, as well as Ulken. Their magic hadn't saved them. It wasn't saving anyone. And neither were the prayers. Even as he watched, another scarlet javelin lanced from the sky and blasted Baal's statue to rubble. Shards of shattered greenstone whipped through the crowd. There was screaming. Blood. More dead. More injured. Fleetingly, he thought of Asher. But help from that quarter was clearly a forlorn hope. Asher wasn't coming. Asher was probably dead. Struck by lightning. Drowned in a ditch. Swallowed by the hungry earth. Asher's survival would be some kind of miracle. Only fools believed in miracles, and Pelin Auric had never been a fool. Numb with despair, he stumbled to the ruined fountain. The remains of the poor fools who had believed in miracles, who needed his help, for all the good he could do them now. But he was a guardsman. Help was his duty. And duty was all he had left.
It's no use, shouted Vera, as the panicked horses reared and plunged, threatening to smash the wagon and everyone in it. We'll have to walk the rest of the way.
Squashed beside the old woman on the wagon seat so Daphne could get some rest in the back, Asher could scarcely hear her words above the howling wind. They were halted where the Blackwoods Road met the main thoroughfare into Dorinna. In the distance, they could see the foaming River Gant, its banks burst, spreading like a lake on either side. A flood of carts and carriages poured past them, fleeing the city, drivers and occupants blind to the mad folk standing still on the side of the road. Dorinna was a scant 2 miles away now. Behind it, the terrible wall thrashed to ribbons against the stricken sky. Asher groaned as his guts thrashed in sympathy. There was a vice clamped around his head, its screws turning tighter and tighter with every heartbeat. Nothing could save Baal's wall now. It was shredded beyond repair. He felt like he was shredding with it, all the power in him curdling and boiling, bubbling like engraver's acid sat on a naked flame.
Hold on, child! Said Vera, her cold lips pressed against his ear. Not much longer now.
He pulled her to him, shoving her face against his chest as fresh hail pelted from the sky. He heard the wagon's makeshift canvas covering tear, and someone's stifled shout as the jagged ice found naked flesh. It sounded like Gar. Then the air was full of sound and soaking splinters as a barbed spear of lightning struck the heart of a towering Jelba tree, too close to their right. The horses bellowed again, ploughing the mud beneath their maddened hooves.
"Please, Vera, you got to let me do something," he begged. "We'll never make it to the city at this rate."
He felt her shake her head.
"No, child," she answered.
Even muffled, her voice brooked no argument.
"He'll hear you and all surprise will be lost. Don't fret yourself. Prophecy's protected us this far. It won't abandon us now."
More red lightning whiplashed the air, struck the ground, the river, somewhere out of sight in the midst of the fleeing city folk.
"Don't listen," said Vera fiercely,
as he jerked his head towards the terrible screaming.
"Your job's ahead, not here. We have to go."
"She's right,"
Matt shouted, holding the horses with all his strength.
"Now help me get these damned animals unhitched before they flip themselves over and squash us all to mincemeat."
Asher let go of Vera and leaped to the ground. As his boots touched mud, the earth trembled and shuddered, heaving as though something monstrous and living surged just beneath the surface, battling to be free. The wagon lurched forward as the horses tried to run.
"Get to their heads, Asher!"
yelled Matt.
"Hold them till I reach you! Vera, down! In the back there, get out!"
Skidding in the slimy mud, Asher reached the nearest horse's head and wrapped his fingers in the bridle, willed the bloody animal to stand, 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 you bastard! Digging in his heels, he hung on till he thought his arm would tear right off at the shoulder. Then Matt was with him, and there was a knife in his hand, sharp blade flashing, severing harness and traces. The horses, sensing freedom, struggled even harder. The knife slipped. A horse squealed. Blood churned into the mud underfoot. Then the last length of leather surrendered to the steel. Mindless with fear, the horses bolted, bridles still intact, canvas blankets slipping and sliding and flapping like sails. Gasping, grunting, Matt and Asher propped each other upright and watched the animals disappear into the gathering murk. The lowering clouds pressed lower still and belched a blizzard of snow.
"Come now,"
said Vera, chivying like a shepherd with her flock.
"We'll freeze to death and turn into snowmen standing here. And besides, we've work to do."
Asher straightened, managed a wry grimace in Matt's direction, then turned his face towards their destination. Felt his guts spasm all over again, protesting the death of Baal's magic.
"You all right?"
said Matt. He nodded. "I'll manage. You?"
"I'll manage."
There was pain in Matt's face, echoing his own. "Let's go then, eh?" Staggering and stumbling as the uneasy ground beneath them shuddered and the freshly rising wind flung hail and snow in their faces, with newly bleeding Gar supporting Darren, Matt lending a strong arm to Vera, and Daphne stubbornly alone, they started doggedly towards the city, towards the failing wall, which drew them like a magnet. When he'd done all he could for the dead and maimed of Supplicant's Fountain, and finally convinced that fool Holes to get the people praying inside the chapel, even if it meant they had to stand on each other's shoulders and dangle from the ceiling, Oryk stayed in the streets doing whatever else was needed. Indifferent to the danger, to spears of lightning, squalls of hail and snow, the wind and stinking rain, abruptly collapsing buildings and lethally panicked livestock, he clambered over chunks of masonry and spars of timber, splashed through red-tinged puddles, and stepped over rents in the cobbles. Because what else could he do? Go back to his office? His desk? His paperwork? He was trying to force his way into a half-tumbled dress shop in Lace Lane, one street back from the square, to see if anyone was inside injured when a clutching hand closed round his good elbow.
Pellin!
He turned.
Asher!
It was him, whole, alive, and not alone. Behind him, shrouded in cloaks and hoods, huddled Matt, Daphne, Darren, the prince, with blood on his face, and a wrinkled old woman he'd never laid eyes on before.
Asher!
He said again, and was flooded with the complication of emotions, the ending world blurred briefly.
How did you?
Asher shook him. Pain flared, but he didn't care.
Where's Geralt? I mean Morg!
He pressed a hand to his wounded shoulder, felt fresh blood seeping, and a fresh chill of horror at the sound of that name.
No one's seen him. No one knows.
Another crimson whiplash of lightning, shrill and shrieking, the hideous screaming of horses, the bellowing of bulls, a thudding rumble as the musician's guild house collapsed. Out of nowhere, an icy wind, howling and whirling and tearing the bruised clouds to pieces. A frightened, ragged cry sounded beyond the line of the lane's wrecked shops. Auric looked at Asher, and unspeaking, they ran, splashing and reckless, back to the square. The others followed. When they reached the open, rubbled space at the city centre, what they saw stopped them in their tracks.
"Baal have mercy,"
moaned Darren. The few remaining threads of Baal's miraculous wall flapped uselessly against the green and purple sky. Once proud and gold and mighty, it was now a ripped and rattled mockery of itself. Even as they and the fools still out in the open watched, pieces of magic tore free of the anchoring mountains, setting fire to the trees at their top. Then Asher and Matt cried out together, staggering, as the last stubborn links of Baal's great wall snapped. A booming thunder of enormous energy, released, shivered shaken buildings to ruins, pressed flesh to brittle bones. Beneath the city's cobblestones, the earth turned over in one last massive protest. Every person standing was thrown to the ground, shouting, and all the sensible folk who'd taken refuge in the chapel came running out again, down the steps and into the square, to see for themselves what had happened. Holes came out behind them, Braid flying, to stand on the top of his precious chapel steps and weakly call them back. The wind fell silent. No rain. No snow. No pounding hail. Gasping, Auric and the others clambered to their feet. Auric looked around him, tried to see what fresh damage was done to his poor dying city, if anyone else was killed. His heart stuttered. Heedless of the pain, he flung up his injured arm and pointed, shouted,
"Look! Look!"
The sorcerer Morg was coming. Chapter 36. He floated on air. On power invincible, high above the wrecked, rubbled city and over the crowd-crammed square.
Baal, my beloved, your wall has fallen, and I am here.
A voice assailed him.
Conroid, if you are indeed Conroid,